My name's Eddie Temple, and I first started to go to sea to earn a living in 1938. I'd been before that, you know, on pleasure trips on trawlers all over and that. But that's when I first started earning a living. I went out of Hull. I was 15. The first trawler I went on was called a Lord Hewitt. I was Dickie Lerner, and that's where it all started. First trip was to Iceland. There's only one thing same today as what it was then, and that's the condition you worked under and the danger of the task he was doing. But everything else, oh my God. When we first went to Iceland, we had a compass, a direction finder, and a sounder, what you wound up like a gramophone. And that was it. You relied entirely on the skipper's knowledge for where you wanted to go and how you used to get back. In fog, you had no radar, nothing like that. But you used to get there and back, and it was quite enjoyable at times. There was 15 in the crew. There was a skipper, mate, bosun, third hand, and then four or five deckhands, a cook, two firemen, chief engineer, second engineer. There was about 15 altogether, and Dickie Lerner, that was me for a start. It means you're like an apprentice. Everybody's beck and call, and you had to do as you was told, or you got kicked up the ass, and that was it. That was a Dickie Lerner's job. And when you was on passages, that was me running down to Iceland and running back from Iceland, you helped the cook in the galley. So you helped him with his spuds, and you had to do his cleaning and what have you. But as regards getting bath, we used to live down the forecastle. There was 10 of us down the forecastle. And to get a bath, you went aft in the galley, got a bucket of cold water. Then you got a big shackle out of the shackle locker under the whaleback, put it in the fire, got it out with pokes and chucked it in the bucket. And that's how you got your hot water. Yeah, you got bath down the forecastle with a drop of Lysol in it, like it stopped stinking. But the comparison nowadays, well, it's unbelievable. We used to be away about a month, and we were in dock 36 hours. And I lived in Scarborough fishing out of Hull when I first started. That means if we was in on a bad tide, I couldn't get home until morning, and I was going away again, maybe at tea time. My wages was 35, I'd go with new pence, 35 new pence a week. The old trawlers used to take about 5 days to get to Iceland. So it was 5 days there, 5 days back, and 10 days fishing. But if you had to move ground, sometimes you used to, well, not often, but you had to steam across to Greenland, like, you know, refined fish, and you was away a month then. I remember once coming back from Greenland and was burning netting that out to net pound to get us back. We'd run short of coal. There was no comparison with the engine room. You got an engine twice as big as this room. There was these great massive conrods going up and down. Then you went past the engine into what they call the boiler room, where they stoked the boilers. That was a great big thing. The fireman had to keep that going and clean it out. Well, not the boiler, but he had to lance the tubes when he was on your way home. That means get the soot out of them and what have you. And it was quite hard work for them and all, even the firemen and engineers. But I laugh nowadays when they're all on about this asbestos, how dangerous that is. A trawler was wrapped in asbestos. I mean, down the forecastle, you had this big chimney going up out the bogey stove with asbestos cord round it. You went aft down the engine room, everything was wrapped in asbestos, and the poor old chief, he didn't know where the hell he was going for asbestos, because everything he touched was asbestos. All the pipes was lagged with it and everything. When you was running down to Iceland, you worked what they call three watches. It was 24 hours split up into three. It was midnight to three till breakfast, breakfast to dinner, that was 12 o'clock, and the longest watch was dinner to tea, because, well, dinner to tea, it was 6 hours, so then was the watches. It was quite good, but two of the crew used to be what they called daymen. They didn't take a watch, they just got the gear ready and what have you. Well, their hours was from breakfast to tea, and that was like 12 hours, and then the rest of the day was their own. But your watch keepers, they helped them at times, even then there was long hours. Especially when he was working just after the war, when he was working British double summertime. He always kept GMT aboard the ship. Then you had to put 2 hours on. Well, if you had an afternoon watch, instead of having 6 hours, you got eight. Oh my God, it was awful, was that? The food you had was just exactly the same as you got ashore, but it was good. Now, there's an old saying aboard a trawler, the Lord sends the grub, but the devil sends the cook. If you had a good cook, you were all right, but if you didn't, my God, you suffered for it. And bread making, if a cook was a good bread maker, he could get away with anything, but some of it, my God, you should have tasted some of the bread we had to eat. Kettle was always on. And for breakfast, when you were steaming down, you used to get bacon. But I was in one of Pickering's ships, and they had big smokehouses in Hull, and all you got then was loads and loads and loads of kippers, until you got sick of seeing them, then you dumped them. But the food aboard the trawler was good, no doubt about that. Just depends who cooked it. But tea, that was a big thing. It was all us on was tea. Big kettle, oil, about 2 gallons in the galley, and you go any time you wanted. So that was all right. There's one, I was at Grimsby, and never used to dump a thing. If you started off with a joint, it finished up as a meatball, maybe 3 or 4 days afterwards, and it had gone through all different stages up to then. In fact, we got that chocker with it, we used to dump it after 2 days, because you knew what you was going to get. Whether it was good or bad, you had to eat it. And there's another one, Ernie Dickinson. He used to fry his fish on a morning and then wash all his pots and pans up in the sink. Then he'd have a wash after he'd done all that. See, when anybody wondered, because I mean, we was all alike, was it? We weren't exactly. I didn't know that. I ain't got a name for what we was. And then again, when I first went to sea, this was before I went proper, I used to go pleasuring with old steamboats out of here. And used to be mending with tarry twine. Your hands was all tarry twine. Cook would shoot dinner, grub up, and on staging aft where a small boat was kept, there used to be a bucket of paraffin. You used to go dip your hands in, rub it like that, wash them in scuppers, and that was it. There was no such thing as hygiene. Nobody suffered. First 12 months at sea, I was sick nearly every day. It was only steaming though. While I was fishing, it could blow a reckoner out like that, and it never bothered me. But once we got that gear aboard and we set off for home, oh my God, my stomach used to turn somersaults, because that was with amazing chocolate. We used to carry good chocolate in Bond. And cigarettes. Cigarettes was 10 for 50. And then there was rum. And he wouldn't give us rum because I was too young for it then. At all, you used to get half a bottle, and that was your rations for a trip. He wouldn't give it out until you started fishing, then you used to get your half bottles. But he wouldn't give everybody one at a time, you know. You used to get one, then next day somebody else would get one. So he couldn't get drunk. At Grimsby, it was different. It used to be, dished out with tot. And that was all right. And you weren't allowed to, well, you weren't supposed to serve your top light. I wouldn't let him. When I was skipper, I used to dish it out, and I was a good boy. I'd just come out of the service. I was in the Air Force during the war. I was in Air Sea Rescue. Of course, you know. Anyway, I went to fish, well, I fished out of here a bit with a man in Ambitious, and I didn't like sea netting, so I got a job at Shields, and I was there while I got my mate's ticket. I was 24, I think, when I got that. I did my time, mate, at Shales, 12 months, then I went for my skipper's ticket. I got my skipper's ticket. I was 26 then. I was a month from stopping going to school to taking a boat away. Too soon, I think, like, really, but there I did it. And that's where the first trouble started in my life, because that was the time as the Great North Sea Gale, 1953, as it finished up. And I'll tell you all about that. We'd had lovely weather. Fishing weren't too bad, and we're working down at Bayman's Hall there, that's east of Shields, about 40-50 miles. And all of a sudden we got this gale warning, light southwest winds, back in northwest, and probably reaching gale force. Well, nobody thought now about that. Anyway, at afternoon, this wind started to come. Our downfall was when we lost our mizzen, that's the sail aft, like, you know, was going nicely ahead of wind with the mizzen, and just engines ticking up. When that went, everything started to go wrong. We're going along nicely. My father, he was mate with me, he was on the wheel at the back, and suddenly this great big sea, it says, I'm not kidding you, it's like sat here and looking up at Castle. It was hell of a height, many yards, many fathoms and many metres. It hit us and we keeled over, and suddenly the wheel went slack and the rudder had smashed. Now that was it. If it had dropped off, it would have been all right, but it wasn't. It was hung on a big, like, collar on the top, and it was swinging backwards and forwards. Well, the outcome of that was it pushed itself up through the back of the boat, so we start to leak. Now, this was getting good, and cabin started to fill up with water. We tried to bail it out with buckets. Anyway, we was coping, but my dad says to me, I'm sure there's an easier way to get this water out. Well, I said, if you don't think of one, Jack, I says, go and do it. So he went down the engine room, and the trawler's cabin in them days was like a big tank. Half over the engine room and aft, like, you know. It was all like riveted plates. So he went down, and him and the chief chopped 2 rivets out of this tank affair, like, and the water started to go. He was nearly killed with a rivet when it shot out. That's another little bit coming after that. I was shouting for boats, mayday. There was boats anchored. I know there's boats anchored. My mate was anchored, but I says, for God's sake, Jim, don't come out. I says, it's too bad. And then an oil tanker answered me on the Dutch coast. Well, he said, I've got 40,000 ton of oil aboard. If I can get it round, I will. And he says, where are you? And I turn it over. He says, a bit, you know, long way. So I said, don't bother. Anyway, I got in touch with Kromakowski and told him what the situation was. And the Georgette, that was a Shales trawler, he started to come towards me. And the poor sod, he's coming round, he got the line aboard, but it jammed and broke. So he had to come round again. And in the process of coming round, it was all hand steering in them days. Like, you know, you used to put your wheel out over, put a rope strop on, then you could leave it. Well, this strop come off. And the brass spoke hit him across the head. Well, that nearly killed him, so he had to leave us. Then they sent Olive, Sandy Hasty. He was coming to us. He shipped to sea and put all his all his fires out in the boiler. Anyway, he cleared that up and come to us. And the first thing he did to us, he come nearly alongside, he couldn't get too close, was chuck us a bottle of rum aboard. So that was all right. And eventually we got towed into Grimsby. But there was a little snag in between that. The lightship had gone, and this skipper hadn't been into Grimsby before, and there was a fairway boy called a cleanest boy, and the bloke that was towing us went one side and we went the other, so we was hung arse on with a wire between us and nowt happening. So anyway, we get sorted out with that, and we had one rocket left, just one, and fired this shimmily. I think I've still got the cartridge in the shed somewhere. Fired, got this shimmily across, connected up and got underway again. Do you know, we died 1,000 bloody deaths in that gale, and I'll tell you the exact date and the exact time to the minute when it happened. The date was 31st of January 1953, and the time was 9:31, because that's when Wheelo's top come off, and there was a big sliver of glass in the clock, and smashed it and stopped the time. And the man at the wheel was covered in blood, and I thought, my God, he's chopped his head off. But all it was, when I got him cleaned up, was a little snick in his ear there. And he was covered in blood. But my dad, who the hell he worked through it, I don't know. When he had out of the wheel, when they see it is, there's a brass spoke, what they call a king spoke, and that just bent up like a net hook. Well, I didn't know till we got ashore, and his hand hurt him. He got to the doctor's, and it smashed all the bones in his hand. And he'd worked through it. Even helping us to bail out and, you know, chopping this rivet open. Who the hell he did it, I don't know. So that was that little episode. My mate Jim Shader, he was skipper, and we're coming home in a gale of wind from Fera. We shifted a small boat on the boat deck. It just went skew away. So anyway, Jimmy's boat in, and we went to square boat up, and there's a scratch davit. We got it wound up and pushing it round to put it back on its chocks, and some silly sod, I don't know who it was, he hadn't put the brakes on properly and took the handles out. So anyway, it just pulled itself back, and this big handle, the big iron handles, you know, it cracked this bloke across top of head. Thought, oh my God, here we go again. We got him into the galley. We got the boat lashed up, right, got him into the galley. And so anyway, I chopped his head off, and I made a grommet with a bandage, put it on, and then bolted it down tight so it wouldn't move. And we got him home all right. Little did I know, nobody would have known about boat. When he'd been hit, a clot of blood had shifted down to the back of his skull, and he was having trouble with that. Anyway, he lived all right. Yeah, lad, had it now. Some funny things happened to me, I'll tell you. 60-70 miles east of Humber, and this laddie, he came up to me, he said, I think there's something matter with me, skipper. I said, what's my, he said, my throat hurts. Well, I said, go and turn him for a bit, like, see if it clears up. Anyway, it didn't, so I looked at him and said, my God, he could hardly breathe. So I got on to radio doctor. Oda wanted me to do a tracheometry, you know. I thought, my God, his boat was going up and down like I didn't know what. I said, I can't do a tracheometry. I said, if it's a force push, like I'll have to do. Anyway, he says, the best thing to do, if you've got any tubes out, get one down his throat. Tubes, oh God, where do you get tubes from? Anyway, chief engineer said, I've got some big electrical wire. If we take it inside out, that makes a tube, and stick it down his neck, that'll keep him breathing. Anyway, he got praise from it when medics got aboard. They whopped aboard and got him ashore in a helicopter. I've had two people die on me. Well, I was only decky then when I was working down at White Sea. I had bunked there, and this fellow was bunked down that way, like. I thought, what the hell's the matter with him? He was talking to his mother. I thought, is he going queer or what? So I got out and had a look at him, and oh, he didn't half look bad, so I went up and told skipper. I says, I think you better come and have a look at him. And do you know, there was buggers with some of them skippers. They wouldn't go and look at people. There was God, and they made you know there was God. Some was God, right? I'm not saying they're all the same. Anyway, he died, and another one, a nice old fella, I was mate with him for about 8-9 years, old Charlie Hudson. And I was on watch, and, you know, it was time for all in. So he gets all in time. I went in and told him. I says, all in time, Skipper. He says, are you all right? And, oh, my God, he'd got it wheelhouse, and I thought we'd taken a bit of oil. He was going round and round in circles. I thought I'd better go up there and see what's happening. He was dead up floor. So that was another one. Oh, I broke my heart, did that. Oh, my God, I see a lot of tragedies, even myself overboard. We're working North Sea, it was flatting, and we had a lot of chains and that on net to tickle them out at sand. I don't know what happened, something jammed somewhere, and I had stood inside at bobbins stupidly to see what was happening. And it started to pull the bobbins overboard. Well, I thought, Edmund, there's only one place you can go, and that's overboard, so I jumped over. And I could swim. My dad couldn't, and he was at sea all his life, he couldn't swim. But when you're going in a winter town when freezing zero like it's water, it's not too clever. But anyway, a bloke called Sid Sparks, he got what we call a short hook. That was a big long stick with hook on it, like, and he gaffed it in the back. Bugger he was, it. He drew me oil skin. And anyway, we got back, I climbed up and got back again. Aye. The worst part of our married life was that incident I was telling you about, where we smashed a rudder. And she was come down to her mother's, because the fishermen, if anything's happening, the wives and that, all us get together. And she was sat listening to it wireless, because I was on, like, to different people, asking about things and what have you. And she fell asleep with her nose on. We had a blue spot on it like that, with a bulb in it. She bent her nose on it. And that was bad then. Yeah, we used to talk, you know, about these different things. But when you got out like that, everybody used to muster together. That was the worst time I had at sea, I think. It was all right money-wise, like, you know, because you didn't do bad in trawlers and that. You got your regular weekly wage, your percentage. When you was deckies at Hull, £5 a week basic wage, and then you got twopence to the pound net. You got twopence to the pound net. Well, just after the war, all we was making there was about, well, if you made £1,000 at times, you thought you were well off. Well, after they took the expenses out, you'd get maybe about, I think the best one I got when I was deck was about 40 quid, something like that. But I've seen us come off dock and go settling, and, oh, Burns want this and Burns want that, and by the time you got home, you got no left. I mean, that's what it should be. You got fed, except skippers and mates, they had to pay for their own grub. So we were... We were worse off at time, income tax. And then your sea gear, you used to go in stores before you went away, get what sea gear you wanted, put it on a bill and it'd stop it out your wages. When I first went to sea, my mother gave me £5, and I got two sets of everything, and I still had change for that £5. That was on old docks. I had two pair of sea boots, two pair of fair knots. They were white trousers, like cricket trousers, but thick, you know, and flaps on the no bloody flies are out, flaps. And two pair of sea boots, stockings, two pair of boots, two oilskins, two sou'westers, and I had change out of a fiver. You won't get much change out of a £500 nowadays. I went to sea when I was 15. That was in April 1938, and I was at Hull until August 1939, when the war broke out. Then I got called up. I was only, what, 17, 18, I think, when I got called up. I went in Air Force then. That was a good job. Stationed in Orkney's one bit, and I finished up... 30 miles from anywhere in Burma. And then I came back Scarborough fishing. Went in Cobbler with Frank Cullen. By God, what a fisherman. And then I went in a trawler here. The first one I went in. Isle of Wight. Somebody was badly and I just took the place. Then I went in Ryby and Crystal. And then I went back in Cobbler with Frankie. And from sea, I retired, finished going to sea when I was... 57, somewhere like that. Then I worked in lighthouse till they paid me off, like, you know, 65. And then after that, I used to do a bit of net mending for Freddie Nom. You know Freddie Nom? He's a good lad to me, he was Fred. So that was me sea career, like, finished. I've no regrets about going to sea at all. None at all.